If you so desire, here it is. I am Sakage, a lord of shadows. I claim the shadows that the shadow may not. I am the strong arm of deliverance. I am Shadow Strider. I am the scales of justice. I am he who guards unseen. I am Shadow Slayer. I am nameless. The Korante shall not go unpunished. My way is hard, but I serve unbroken. In ignobility, nobility. In shame, honor. In darkness, light. I will do justice and love mercy. Until the king returns, I shall not lay my burden down.
Who's the king?
Vows are a bitch, eh?
This is what the Sakage is supposed to be, isn't it?
The Sakage's always been made of thugs and murderers. But there have been moments, like diamonds studding a pile of shit, when they've been crooks with a purpose.
Thanks for the image.
You gonna say the words?
You'd make me commit to something I don't fully understand.
Kid, we're always committing to things we don't fully understand.
I thought you'd lost your faith in this and everything else.
This isn't about my faith. It's about yours.
It was standard Durzo evasion. You don't ask someone you care about to swear their life to horseshit. Durzo was continuing the conversation they'd started months ago about Kyler's destiny. In choosing a life in the shadows, in choosing obscurity, Kyler would avoid one of the greatest temptations of the Black Kakari. The temptation to rule. Its power made him almost a god already, and the danger was always that he could become what he sought to destroy. Durzo hadn't even trusted himself with so much power. Did Kyler think he was that much better a man than his master? A man serving the shadows also saw things that no king could see. A man serving in ignobility saw wrongs that were hidden from those in power. No one bothered to hide anything from Durzo Blint, except their fear of him. The oath of a night angel wasn't enough to make a destiny, but it was a start.
What am I for?
Whatever else he didn't know, Kyler knew he longed for justice. By serving in darkness with eyes that saw through the darkness, by being welcomed into the shadows, he could give justice to those who'd escaped justice. Those overlooked, too unimportant for mercy, would find better than they'd hoped for. Those who should be stopped would be stopped. The faces of the Night Angels were already Kyler's faces.
I will do justice and love mercy. I'll say it.
Durzo grimaced, but beckoned him closer and laid a hand on Kyler's forehead.
I am Sakage, a lord of shadows. I claim the shadows that the shadow may not. I am the strong arm of deliverance. I am Shadow Strider. I am the scales of justice. I am he who guards unseen. I am Shadow Slayer. I am nameless. The Korante shall not go unpunished. My way is hard, but I serve unbroken. In ignobility, nobility. In shame, honor. In darkness, light. I will do justice and love mercy. Until the king returns, I shall not lay my burden down.
As Kyler finished, Durzo's hand grew strangely warm, his face somber. Durzo withdrew his hand, his deep eyes limpid, and, for perhaps the first time Kyler had ever seen, at peace.
What was that?
Whatever else the words had done, Kyler felt power suffusing him, more gently than when Sister Ariel had given him power, but also more solidly.
That was my blessing.
Durzo smirked, acknowledging he was a bastard for blessing Kyler in a language he didn't understand. With the way he'd trained Kyler's memory, he surely knew Kyler would remember the words until he was able to track down the outlandish language they'd been spoken in. But it wasn't in Durzo to just tell him.
Now get the hell out of here. I've got trees to climb.
Logan and Lantano Garawashi stood with their retainers on top of a still pristine tower that guarded the mouth of the pass, surveying what would be the battlefield to the north. The great dome of Black Barrow and the dark stain of devastation around it were miles away on the opposite side of the Gavari River. Logan saw wonders to every side. Before Jorsen Alkestis had buried Treathel beneath Black Barrow, it had been one of the great cities of the world in a world where wonders were common. To the east was Lake Rule, which had been dammed in ages lost. The dam still stood, feeding the Gavari River, not through the sluice gates on its front, which had been closed for centuries, but over the top of the dam itself. A series of locks, long since broken, had once made it possible for cargo ships to reach the city from the ocean. Half a dozen bridges or more had once spanned the river, but all had fallen except two, the wider Ox Bridge and a Black Bridge near the dam. The tower in which they stood guarded the entrance to Ox Bridge. It commanded views of the pass behind them, the terraced slopes of Mount Terzin to the southwest, and everything except whatever lurked on the far side of Black Barrow. Looking at the terraced hillside and the empty expanse at its base that they called the Great Market, Logan had a revelation. He'd always thought Black Barrow had enclosed the city of Treathel. It hadn't. Jorsen had only enclosed the city's heart. Treathel had spanned leagues. If what Logan was looking on was correct, the city had been bigger and more populous than any city now in the world.
We'll have to move our men over Ox Bridge tonight. It'll take maybe 4 hours for 30,000 to cross. The camp followers will have to cross in the dark.
Cross? Do you see One Hope's army? We have 26,000 men, half of whom have never seen battle. One Hope has 20,000, 10,000 more Highlanders, and 2,000 Meisters, each of whom is worth a dozen men. You want us to fight with our backs against a river? No. We'll guard the bridges and put our men in the Great Market in case One Hope tries to ford the river there. We'll see how well his men fight waist-deep in water. If necessary, we can retreat slowly into the passes.
You're planning for defeat? This is lunacy! We cross the bridge and we destroy it behind us. Desperate men fight best. If you leave them an out, they'll flee, especially your battle virgins. Give them no chance but to win or die, and they will fight almost like a Sakurai.
They outnumber us, and we have 4 Magi. 4!
Numbers mean nothing. Each Sakurai is as 100 men. We came here for victory.
I'll give you victory.
You'll give us nothing.
That's not what I meant. Tonight, under the cover of darkness, I'm sending 10,000 men west down the river. My Fayuri scouts say there's a crossing a few miles down. 10 miles downriver is Rekukas. It's not a big city, but all One Hope's supplies flow through there, and it's very defendable. We send our Magi with my 10,000, and they can take Rekukas before dawn. If we starve One Hope's army, it will be his men who melt away in the night.
They'll see our men heading west unless you mean to march 10,000 without any light.
The torches will only be visible for the first half mile. And then there's a forest between them and the Caladorans. It'll look like men moving around among our campfires.
Garawashi was quiet for a long time.
So be it, Sonarian. But I'm sending 1,000 of my Sakurai with your men to take the city. None shall have the glory greater than the Sakurai.
Thus it begins. Dorian was meeting with his generals in the afternoon when he felt the first twinges of madness rising.
Enough. Here's what I want. Make sure our defensive positions are impregnable. I don't want them to even try us. Let them see our strength. In the meantime, I need better intelligence on Moburu's numbers. We know he has 2,000 Krell. How many men does he have? And where the hell is...
A vision flashed before Dorian's eyes of Kali herself, rising from the ground, perfect, whole, beautiful, embodied, and smiling victoriously. The room had disappeared, and only she remained, potent, a black ocean of Krell rising around her.
And where the hell is Nefdata?
Though he couldn't see the speaker, Dorian knew it must be Janine.
His Holiness demands you find out. He'll expect your report this evening. For now, be gone.
Dorian blinked, and the vision was gone. General Naga turned back as he reached the flap of the tent. He seemed reassured to find Dorian meeting his eye.
The Queen speaks with my voice. Is that a problem, General?
Of course not, Your Holiness. I will report when we get word.
I need to use it.
Every time you do, it's harder to stop.
She was right. But with so many armies in close proximity, Dorian needed to use his gift to make sure he didn't trigger a cataclysm. He'd done everything he knew to do militarily to discourage the Cenarians from attacking, but with Neff's men and Moburu nearby, there were too many factors at play for him to not try to see the futures down the roads before him. He studied his gift with a healer's eyes, and he thought he understood why prophecy seemed easier to begin and harder to stop now. The Veer had broken open new channels everywhere throughout his talent, and it had penetrated his prophetic gift, too. All his magic, and now all his prophecies, passed through the tentacles of Veer rather than their natural channels. Because the Veer was thicker, everything passed more freely. It was quite possible that the Veer, tainted itself, was tainting Dorian's gift with bizarre visions like those he'd had of the Strangers, and his wife pregnant with twins. But there was no help for it now. He would stop using the Veer and only use the talent after this.
I love you.
I love you too.
Then he dove in. He tried to hold on to enough of himself to speak what he saw, but the current was too strong. He saw a Titan rise from Black Barrow, and then he pulled downstream 15 years to Taurus Bend. There was Fear standing at a smithy. Then Dorian was 100 years downstream in Treafel, somehow magically rebuilt, celebrating something. A vast parade working through the street. Dorian fought it, tried to throw himself back to a time where his visions would help him. He found himself standing in the guts of Kaliras, deciding whether to take Janine out through the sewage chutes or try to fight their way out. Everything would turn from this one choice. No, that was the past. Damn it. The voice was too distant, and he hadn't found anything yet. Janine drew the curtain that separated Dorian's throne from the rest of his tent.
Dorian!
The king didn't stir. She shut the curtain.
Come in, General Naga.
Your Highness, my apologies, but we've just had a report from a spy. His Holiness must hear it.
His Holiness is not to be disturbed right now.
I'm afraid this requires immediate action.
Then deliver your report.
General Naga hesitated, open-mouthed, as he struggled with the idea of reporting to a woman, much less a woman young enough to be his daughter. Then, wisely closed his mouth.
Your Highness, our spy reports that the Cenarians and Kurons are planning to attack our supply lines at the city of Regukas. They plan to have 10,000 men sneak away tonight under cover of darkness. The Cenarian king said...
The Cenarian king?
I meant the Kuron king. Said we would think that any torches we saw tonight were merely men moving between their campfires. In truth, such movement would only be visible to us for a short section. The Cenarian Queen... Your pardons, Highness, I am having a slight problem adjusting to so many queens. The Cenarian Queen concurred.
Do you trust this spy?
Absolutely, Your Highness.
If we wait until we see the movement of torches tonight, will our men be able to get to Regukas in time to defend it?
It will be a near thing.
Then send 15,000 men now. If we don't see the torches moving tonight, we can send riders to get them to turn back.
15,000? From a defensive position, 5 should be more than adequate to defend Regukas and would still preserve our superiority of numbers here.
He was probably right, and Janine would have conceded to his experience if this had been a war. But it wasn't a war. Those were her people on the other side, too. 15,000 men would be such an overpowering defensive force that the Cenarians would call off an attack on the town as hopeless. Janine was saving lives on both sides, and tomorrow they'd be able to send emissaries to the Cenarians before blood was spilled.
15,000, General. That is, unless you still have a problem adjusting to this queen.
General Naga barely hesitated before he bobbed his head and withdrew. For an odd moment, Janine thought he looked relieved. As night fell, Logan and Garawashi met once more at the top of the tower, this time alone, though each had bodyguards stationed out of earshot on the stairs. They watched the line of Sakurai, everyone bearing a torch, heading downriver. Then the kings turned, scanning the thousands of campfires dotting the plain around Black Barrow. The Caladoran army and the Highlanders stayed outside the circle around Black Barrow that was carpeted with those oddly non-decomposing bodies. They called it the Dead Dymane.
Do you think it works?
One hopes a witch, not a warrior. I think he'll believe everything his spy told him we said earlier.
In truth, Logan had sent 10,000 men west, but only until they were blocked from the Caladoran sight by the forest. Then the men were told to extinguish their torches and make their way back to camp. Logan was sure no small amount of grumbling was going on right now. The men had no idea why they'd been sent marching in circles, and he couldn't tell them in case more spies lurked in their ranks. Meanwhile, Garawashi's 1,000 were continuing west. They would ford the river and come back on the opposite side as stealthily as possible. Dressed in muddied garb, they would crawl through the Dead Dymane. When the sun rose, they would lie in the shadows and huddle next to the corpses as if dead themselves. They would circle the long way around Black Barrow. Garawashi figured it would take them 2 nights to get into place. But then, either on his signal or when they saw the opportunity, the men would don their armor, rise from among the dead, and attack the command tents. If Mamake's spies were right, Janine was there. If not, they might still kill some of Wanhope's generals, or even the God King himself. It was likely a suicide mission, but there had been no lack of volunteers. But the only Sonarians going were 100 of Agon's dogs, former sneak thieves and burglars, and his witch hunters with their Yamuri bows. Of course, as Agon and Garawashi kept telling Logan, timing was everything. Those 1,000 men were among the army's best. If Wanhope did split his forces, and tomorrow went as planned, Logan and Garawashi might be close to victory. Those extra 1,000 veterans could turn a Caladoran retreat into a rout.
But the Yuri scouts say that the Kurin force following us is led by the regent himself. I will be obliged to kill myself when he discovers I have no sword. My men will be invited to join me in suicide, or return to Kurin immediately.
How far back is he?
Now he understood why Garawashi had been so adamant that the 1,000 who snuck through the Dead Dymane be Sakurai. It was a service to Logan. Separated from command, they wouldn't know that their leader had been disgraced, so they would keep fighting.
They will arrive tomorrow night.
We can stop them in the passes. There are narrow...
He has 20,000 Sakurai. My men would wonder why we were fighting the regent, who only wants to see the blade of heaven. Even without him, they will expect me to lead them into battle. This is my last night.
Both men turned as one toward the stairs. The man was nearly as big as Logan, not quite as tall, but wide as an ox. He'd carried some flab, but it was only a thin layer over rock-hard muscle.
Maybe not, my lord. I don't suppose either of you has a big ruby.
They looked at each other, and Logan saw a thin, desperate hope in Lantano Garawashi's eyes. He knew then that this man would kill himself in a heartbeat if he needed to. There was nothing in Lantano Garawashi that desired death.
No? Damn. Well, I hope we can find someone who's good with illusions.
The big man stepped forward and unwrapped a bundle to produce a sword.
My lord, I present you with Cor Callisto.
V and 300 of the fittest war magi made it through the eastern fork of the pass an hour before dawn. Sadly, fittest wasn't the same as most talented. The journey had taken longer than anyone had expected. Ushering 8,000 women, most of them middle-aged, and every single one more than willing to share her opinion, through the mountains had been a nightmare. Most of the rest would arrive sometime during the day, but a sizable number wouldn't arrive until the next day or the day after that. Even with bodies that appeared decades younger than their years, 80 and 90-year-olds were simply not going to hurry. V thought that if she never saw another woman in her life, she'd count herself lucky. After some bickering with sentries that had ended when V lifted both men off the ground with her talent and shook them, V was brought directly to King Gyre. He was among his men, reassuring them with his presence, and as V approached, he was cinching the leathers of a young horseman's pauldrons. He had heard of Logan Geyer, of course, but seeing him was altogether different. He was perhaps the tallest man she'd ever seen, and perfectly proportioned. In his white enameled plate armor, gilded with a Geyer falcon with wingtips breaking a circle, he was the perfect picture of an energetic young king at war. He was muscular, his carriage erect, and though he walked with the knowledge that eyes were on him, he didn't seem to revel in it. There was also something odd about his right forearm. It seemed brighter than the other somehow.
My lady, is there something I can do for you?
I'm Visovari of the Chantry. I bring 300 Magi and 7,000 more by tomorrow. We have come to help you.
Thank you. I dare say we will have need of healers. But so many.
Your Majesty, we are War Magi.
War Magi?
We have withdrawn from the Accords that we may help you.
This changes things. They may have 2,000 Meisters, 200 Würdmeisters among them. We have 10 Magi. How can you help me?
2,000? If they bring 2,000 Meisters against us before the rest of my sisters arrive, we'll be worm food in an hour.
I may have drawn off half of them. How long could you and your 300 hold out against 1,000?
We might make it, and some of the sisters should arrive during the day. My war magi are mostly good at defensive magic, Your Majesty.
Good. Then I want half of you to hold Black Bridge and the dam. Spread the others out through the lines.
A messenger trotted up, and Logan held up a finger, forestalling the man.
Oh, and thank you, sister. Your aid is desperately needed and greatly appreciated. I hope to speak more with you this evening.
You're welcome. And, Your Majesty, I know you are a friend of Kyler's. He'll be here.
Yes. I'm sure he shall.
V was stationed with 150 of her sisters at Black Bridge, almost in the shadow of the Great Dam, when she realized what that look meant. Logan thought V meant Kyler would be here in spirit. Logan still thought Kyler was dead. Logan and Garawashi were astride their mounts in the Great Market as the first rays of dawn revealed the God King's armies arrayed across from their own.
They fell for it. They must have sent 15,000 men to Rekukas. Last night they had 6,000 more men than we did. Now they have 10,000 less.
Only two things can undo us now.
Magic.
And young men so drunk on glory that they forget their discipline.
So when do we attack?
Right now.
It was still dark in the royal tent. Dorian ran a hand over Janine's bare shoulder, down her back and over her hip. Her beauty made him ache. He shouldn't have brought her here. It was too dangerous in too many ways. She wasn't asleep, but she feigned it for him. She knew how he enjoyed her. He inhaled the scent of her hair once more and sat up. He began dressing.
That army is Cenarion. Those are my people.
Yes.
How do I find myself in my enemy's camp, my lord?
Have you ever wondered what would happen if someone threw a war and nobody came?
What do you mean?
I have no intention of killing any Cenarians, though I understand why they won't believe that. We're here only to destroy Nef and Moburu. At dawn, our emissaries will let the Cenarians know that we will not attack. But I don't think we have to worry about them. They've already taken a defensive position as we have. They'll stay until they see us withdraw, and then they'll go home.
Janine stood, and Dorian couldn't help but glory in her beauty. The familiar panic-edged desire swept over him. He wanted to grab her and make love frantically, right now, as if he might never have a chance to again. But it was almost dawn, and there were things he needed to do.
My people are aggrieved at your father's predations, and that savage Lantano Garawashi is with them. They say he bathes in blood. What will we do if they attack? I will be our emissary. They will believe me.
No!
Why not?
It's dangerous.
They will not attack a woman approaching under flag of parley. Besides, better a hazard to me than to 40,000 lives.
It's not that. Your presence might precipitate war, my love. What will Terra Grayson do, even under a flag of parley, if she sees you alive? Your life would be the death of all her power. People will do horrible things to keep what they love, Janine.
The fact was, if he sent Janine to Logan, the threat of Cenarion attack would end in 1 second. And so would his marriage. Unless, what if Janine chose him? She'd barely known Logan. What Dorian had built with her was real, but it was built on a lie.
You're right, my lord husband. I just wish there was something I could do.
Don't worry. It's going to be fine.
Dorian stepped through the tent flap and saw a young man sweating, obviously bearing a message for him, and obviously too afraid to wake a god king.
What is it?
Your Holiness, the war chief wishes me to tell you that the attack on Regukas was a ruse. Our spies were wrong. The Cenarians outnumber us by more than 10,000 now, and Your Holiness, they're attacking.
Fighting in these damn robes was going to be a chore, but V was glad she hadn't worn her scandalous wet boy greys. Well, she'd worn them, but under the robes. Going into battle without her greys would be like going into battle with her hair unbound. A blonde man, wider than he was tall, brought his horse into the line next to her. A maid, she could tell.
Fear Kusart. You, V?
She nodded. They were positioned 10 ranks back, behind pikemen and shield-bearers who were guarding the bridge in front of the dam. From their elevated position, they could see the whole valley. A flag went up among Garawashi's men down in the market. The third time it waved, the Currens began marching toward the river. Montano Garawashi himself rode beside the front lines, and when he drew his sword, it glowed in the low light. V squinted at the sword. There was something wrong with it.
What's wrong?
The glow. Did you make that?
What? You can see that from here.
It just looks like you. Like your work. I mean, I don't know.
The Highlanders who made up the center of the Caladoran line were slow to react. They did nothing until half of Garawashi's 5,000 had made the opposite bank.
What are they doing? The Caladurans didn't shoot any arrows.
Then the Highlanders began trotting forward. Garawashi's flag dropped when the Highlanders were 30 paces away. To a man, the Sakurai ran with their long swords trailing behind them, the other hand extended forward. Charge was too inelegant a term. Then the lines crashed together. The average Highlander was taller and thicker than the average Sakurai, but as the clash of arms and rattle of armor resounded to where V watched, it was Highlanders who fell 10-1.
Best solo fighters in the world. There are twice as many Highlanders out there. And look!
Within minutes, the rest of the Sakurai had made the crossing. As Fear had said, both sides fought man to man, breaking into 1,000 duels, though neither side was above hamstringing an enemy whose back was turned. Despite the bulkiness that made the Sakurai's lacquer armor look heavy, the men danced. Montano Garawashi presided over it all, dealing death every time Highlanders pushed through the lines to get to him, but mostly watching. The air around him winked and sparkled, and V figured those were arrows or magic the Caladorans were shooting at him. A terrified-looking mage sat on a horse directly behind Garawashi, making constant gestures as he protected the war leader. V saw the effect of the Meisters before she could see the Meisters themselves. The Sakurai line seemed to ripple back, as if all of them had been struck at once. Then she saw green fireballs arcing over the Highlanders to splatter among the Sakurai, the flame turning blue where it hit flesh and sizzling black smoke rising from 100 bodies on fire. In that instant, the Sakurai advance faltered. The Highlanders surged forward. They routed the Currens. But from the rear, where the Caladorans couldn't see, it looked all wrong. While those in the front made big, panicky gestures, none threw down their weapons as they fled. The Sakurai closest to the river sheathed their blades and calmly carried the wounded between them in twos. Montana Garawashi's frenzied waving, the whipping flag. It hadn't been the same flag he'd used for the advance, had it? It was all a setup. Across the bridge in front of V, hundreds of Caladoran soldiers were running to their places. Their archers loosed a flight of arrows. Fear threw his hands up and a shimmering, transparent blue sheet of magic unrolled above the Cenarians, covering those at the foot of the bridge. The first arrows hit the shield, and to be surprised, didn't burst into flame. Rather, they hit the shield like it was a pincushion, poked through it, and robbed of all speed, simply dropped the last 5 feet onto the Cenarians.
Archers, shoot from outside the umbrella!
Before V found the dark figure across the bridge, something blasted her from her saddle. She met the rocky ground with far less speed than she had any right to expect.
Make that Vergmeisters, the bastards.
You saved me.
V noticed the unfamiliar shield around her as she stood.
You owe me. Now do something. I'm tapped out.
A dozen green fireballs of various sizes arced across the bridge. V fumbled for her talent, but her ears were still ringing. She was too slow. Nonetheless, every one of the Caladorans' falling fireballs was lifted like an arrow catching a sudden updraft, then curved in the air and smashed back into the Caladoran lines. V recognized Sister Roga's voice. V's battle magi had practiced that weave for 4 days straight, but seeing it actually work took V's breath away. V couldn't find her horse, though she had no idea how it could have gone anywhere through the massed ranks of pikemen, archers, and shield bearers who were holding the foot of Black Bridge. She pushed her way to the front. The men maintaining the shield wall at the front line looked at her. Their shields were studded with dozens of arrows each. The Caladoran archers had figured out that if they shot at a low enough trajectory, they could find targets here.
How much cover do you want, sister?
The first row of soldiers were on one knee, their shields covering them completely. The second row held their shields at an angle, and a third held theirs overhead despite the umbrella. They were packed as tightly as possible.
You rest!
V pushed her way into place and poked her head through the shields. She found the Vergmeister by the swirling black veer shield spinning in front of him.
Incendio nocturnus!
A moment later, half a dozen darts of mage fire plunged into his shield, but the Vergmeister barely seemed to notice. He was looking down the river toward the ford at the Great Market. The Caladoran Highlanders had pursued the Sakurai across the river, and thousands had now gained the Cenarian side. V's heart jumped into her throat. A blue flare streaked into the sky over the Great Market. To V's right, a mage struggled out onto the narrow stone walkway that ran across the face of the dam. He held the handrail and climbed forward hand over hand, struggling to keep his feet anchored to the stone. At the center of the walkway were two enormous pulleys. The chains wrapped around them still pristine. The chains themselves disappeared into the face of the dam where they would open the sluice gates. The mages threw thick blue ropes of magic at each of the pulleys. He had barely started when half a dozen Vergmeisters who'd been hiding in the Caladoran ranks burst forward. Fire! Hammers of air, gales, and missiles engulfed the lone mages from every direction. The mages' shields held until a gleaming white homunculus winged its way to him. The air ripped open, and a pitworm struck. The worm's jaws crunched through shield and man and one of the huge pulleys. Then it pulled back into whatever hell it had come from and disappeared. A moment later, a half dozen green fire missiles ripped into the other pulley, cracking it and snapping the chain. Only as they destroyed the second pulley did V realize that she'd just seen Garawashi's trap defanged. Garawashi had feigned the rout to draw the Caladorans into the river where he'd meant to drown them. But the Caladorans are known. Why else would they have concealed the presence of 6 Vergmeisters? Now Garawashi's trap had turned back on himself.
Fear!
She turned and surprised to see he was right behind her. The dread in his eyes telling her he understood.
Can you protect me?
His eyes flicked to the Vergmeisters, who, to V's eyes, looked all the same.
3 seconds, 2/3, and 1/6 sure. Shit. Baby?
One of the younger turned his head over his shoulder to say something.
Magus internus!
V lashed out, grabbed the hem of his robe, and yanked. If V had thought about it, she wouldn't have tried. She couldn't reach that far. She never had. The man was halfway down the gorge before he screamed.
Nice grab!
This is the stupidest thing I've ever done!
The dam's walkway was a good 30 feet out and 20 feet down. She ripped off her robes.
Distract them! Now!
The battle magi complied, flinging dozens of fireballs. She leapt into the void, barely remembering to shield herself. The jump was perfect. She landed with both feet on the middle of the walkway, splashing water every direction. Then her momentum carried her into the wall of the dam. Her shield helped. It was still a 20-foot wall. Lee crunched into the wall and then rebounded. She clawed blindly and felt stone under her fingertips for a brief instant. Then she was flying into space. She tensed for impact, but it never came. She opened her eyes and couldn't see anything through the torrent. Then she was clear of it. She saw a thick rope of talent knotted around her and extending all the way back to Sister Ariel, who was grimacing with the effort. In another moment, V was next to one of the chains. She grabbed it, and Sister Ariel released her. Above her, she saw the Verdmeisters. There were only three now, throwing fiery death toward her, but nothing came even close. On the Cenarian shore, 200 women glowed like torches with talent. Her sisters, they were protecting her, and nothing could stop them. Bee's heart swelled to bursting. These women would die for her. For the first time in her life, she belonged. She found the other chain. She stood with one chain in each hand, each link as long as her forearm. She heaved. But without the pulleys, it was just too heavy. She moved a step, out of the dam's shadow into the sun. It wasn't quite noon. She felt sunlight drenching her skin, and she opened herself to it. Opened herself until it burned, until it filled every pore with heat. V opened her eyes. Something was glowing, blindingly bright. It was her. She was luminous. V glowed like the Sarath herself. The sluice gates cracked open. The water blasted into the thousands of Highlanders crossing into the great market. Men clamored for higher ground, stampeding toward shore, crushing their fellows underfoot. Only Garawashi's men were unfazed by the flood. Whether or not they had seen how near their trap had come to collapsing, the Sakurai were ready for it to work. Through all the ground surrounding the great market, they closed ranks and shut down choke points expertly. Then they surged back, pushing Caladorans into a watery death. In places, men clawed their way over the Sakurai shields, but they were quickly cut down. V became aware that everyone on the bridge was staring at her. She was still holding the chains. They were suddenly unbearably heavy. She dropped them and staggered. Hands grabbed her, steadied her. A dozen sisters had ventured out onto the slick walkway to come to her.
Sisters! My sisters!
V started crying, and no one, not one, looked at her like she was stupid. Lantana Garawashi was the first to understand the implications of what occurred at the dam. The trap he and Agon and Logan had worked up had always assumed that they would be able to close the sluice gates after they opened them. With the destruction of the pulleys, it was a miracle they'd been opened in the first place. After flooding out the Highlanders, he and Logan had planned to throw everything at the shaken Caladoran army. Caught between the Currans and the Cenarians and the cursed ground of the dead Daimane, the Caladoran army would have broken in minutes. Instead, the Allies' armies could only advance across the narrow bridges. Garawashi ordered the crossing and ordered Magi to protect the bridges. If he'd been the Caladorans, that's what he would try to destroy. He was right. The counterattack was almost solely magical. Hundreds of Meisters had hit each of the bridges, but then, suddenly, they'd been called off. The Magi told him they could see a magical conflagration on the far side of the Black Barrow itself. Caladorans fighting barbarians, but they couldn't tell him anything else. Had he been able to ford the river, he could have taken advantage of the God King splitting his army. But that was water literally under the bridge. He established beachheads and put engineers to work widening the bridges by whatever means they could, but the situation looked grim. As soon as the Caladorans saw that his men were establishing fortifications and not attacking, they withdrew to high points hundreds of paces away and began working on their own. In the early afternoon, Garawashi found King Gyre in their command tent, which had been moved to the foot of Ox Bridge.
Today was a great victory. They lost more than 9,000 Highlanders. I lost 90 men holding the market. How many Sakurai?
115 in baiting the trap. 8 in springing it.
200 men to kill 9,000.
Tomorrow there 15,000 come back from Regukas, and you lose my Sakurai.
How long until the regent arrives?
An hour. His messengers have asked that he sees me immediately.
It wasn't right. After such a great victory, he should be looking on the morrow with relish. Instead, this night he would kill himself. Many of his Sakurai would join him. The 20,000 Sakurai who accompanied the regent would simply turn and go home.
Can't you just use the illusion you used today?
Veer said there's something about the magic of the blade that interferes with illusions. The glow looked good from 10 or 20 paces while the sword was cutting back and forth, but from up close, that wouldn't withstand a child's scrutiny.
Your Majesties, if I may.
Logan gestured Fear to continue.
I made that sword. If we can find a ruby to hold the spells, I dare say I'm the only person in the world who could tell the difference between the new Cor Kalestos and the real thing. We don't even need a special ruby. It just needs to be big. King Gyre, I'm sure your treasury has something that will work. It seems ridiculous that we'd give up this close.
It's not giving up. It's having our fraud discovered.
What if they didn't discover it?
The regents have been waiting centuries for this. I'm sure they have some kind of test to determine if the blade is real.
So what if they do? The regent's not talented, and you have Magi at your disposal. With a little preparation, we could...
Get out! I listened to you once and dishonored myself. No more! You know nothing of Sakurai. Be gone, snake!
Fear's face drained of color. Garawashi turned his back to him. He almost hoped Fear would strike him down. Let Garawashi die betrayed. Then any flaw found with the sword would be assumed to be the work of the betrayer. Something would be left of Garawashi's name.
If you would save this army and all these thousands of souls, Magi and I will be near. If you would save only your precious honor, you can go to hell.
When Garawashi turned, the big man was gone. King Gyre looked at him silently.
What is a king without honor? These men mean everything to me. They have followed me from villages and cities to foreign lands. When I have gone, they have gone. When I have told 100 to take a hill, knowing it would cost 90 their lives, they have obeyed. They're lions! If they're to die, they should die in battle, not dishonored by their lord. Tomorrow, you'll face 20,000 Caladorans and 2,000 Meisters who barely fought today. Without the Sakurai, your men will be shaken.
Seeing 6,000 men and their unbeatable general kill themselves may do that. As we're looking at the backs of 20,000 Sakurai who could have been allies.
You're a king. What would you do?
You ask me that when I have such an interest in your answer?
I saw you put your closest friend to death for honor.
Logan looked at his hands. He said nothing for a long time.
The night before Kyla went to the wheel, I sent a man to break him out of my own jail. Kyla refused to leave because it would hurt my reign. He believed in me that much. To be king means to accept that others will pay the price of your failures, and even your successes. Part of me died on that wheel. Whatever you decide, Owen Lantano, it has been an honor to fight beside you.
King Gyre, If I choose expiation, will you be my second?
Doan Lantano, I would be honored.
He'd been mad. Fear had followed the instructions of an insane archmages who was 7 centuries dead. Fear had made a sword that even he didn't fully understand. He had bent even Lantano Garawashi to his will. He had believed, and now fraud would build on fraud unless Lantano Garawashi chose to end it all. Having sworn himself to the war leader, Fear would be expected to suicide along with Garawashi. But he wouldn't. He knew that. Of course, the war leader might slay him. But Fear didn't think he'd allow that either. So he would cheat again and defend himself with magic. Every Sakurai in Mid-Kiru would despise him. Perhaps one would hunt him down. That life was Fear's future. Either that, or serving forever as Lantano Garawashi's illusionist-in-chief, threading pretend flames onto his beautiful sword for the rest of his life. That deception would destroy Lantano Garawashi. If he ruled, he would rule badly, knowing himself to be dishonored. Garawashi was not so young that honor was the only important thing in his life, but he was Sakurai to the roots of his soul. The best thing for Garawashi would be to bury a blade in his own guts. The sun sat low in the sky as Fear ducked to step into the council tent. Inside the tent sat King Gyre, Lord General Brant Agon, a Wan V. Sovare, and an older Maja Fear didn't recognize. Fear took an empty seat. King Gyre sat with folded hands to Fear's right. His face was emotionless, but that, in itself, told Fear that the king was worried. As Fear pulled his chair in, something about Logan's right arm drew his attention. There was some magic there, woven small and tight into Logan's bambrance for his arm. Logan noticed his attention and folded his hands in his lap under the table. Fear dismissed it and continued looking around the table. V. Sovare had covered herself with a modest Maja's dress, but at the wrists and neck, her gray-black, skin-tight wet boy's garb was still visible. She had dark circles under her eyes, and her skin was pale from her magical exertions at the dam. She was 4 places down the table, almost at the end of Fear's magical vision, but he could see that she hadn't overextended her talent. After Solon had used Kurok, he'd looked broken. His hair had grown in white, and he'd only escaped permanent injuries because Dorian was such a gifted healer. With her escapades at the dam, V hadn't hurt herself at all. She'd come near the limit of her gifts, but hadn't exceeded it. Fear suspected that with a good night's sleep, she'd be ready to do as much tomorrow. She was easily the most powerful mage here. She might even equal Solon. And, sitting up straight now at a word from the old Maja at her right hand, V felt huge. As a man's muscles looked most impressive after hard labor, so now did V's talent feel enormous. It made Fear feel small, and he didn't like it. The tent flap opened suddenly, and every eye turned to it. But the man who stepped in wasn't Lantano Garawashi. It was a dark-haired, dark-eyed Alataran with a waxed mustache and an eagle seagull on his cloak pin. A Marcus, then, from one of Alatera's most important families, and certainly the leader of the 2,000 Alataran Lancers who'd arrived with the last of the Magi this afternoon.
I didn't realize this council had anything to do with the Alataran military.
Clearly, there was some bad blood here.
This council decides if we've got an extra 20,000 Sakurai, or if we lose the 6,000 we've got. I'd say that makes it a council of war. I'm Tiberius Antonius Marcus, Praetor of 4th Army, 2nd Maniple. We're to defend the Chantry Sisters, Your Majesty.
An honor, Praetor. Please join us.
Before the man sat, the flap opened again, and Lantano Garawashi strode in. He rested his hand over the pommel of his sword and walked to his seat and sat before acknowledging anyone.
Well, everyone's here now except the current regent himself and, of course, the dear Lycanroc Overlord, who I suppose will walk in half an hour late and ask that we repeat everything.
I suppose he will, since I told him this council wouldn't meet for another half an hour.
What little chatter had been going around the room soon died as the sound of thousands of marching feet approached the tent. All 20,000 Sakurai were coming. This could get ugly. The tent flap opened, and a teenage boy and a middle-aged man with a fringe of auburn hair around an oiled pate stepped in. The middle-aged man had four locks of hair bound to his, all of them current, all of them old. He stood aside to make way for the boy, who couldn't have been more than 15. The boy had fiery orange hair cropped close to his skull and a single, very long lock bound into his hair. He wore ornately embroidered blue silk robes and a ruby-encrusted sword. Fear had the insane thought of breaking off the biggest ruby and using it for his fraud.
Sisters, lords, praetor, your majesty, may I introduce Sasakurai Hideo Mitsurugi, 6th Regent Hideo, Lord of Mount Tenji, Protector of the Holy Honor, Keeper of the Highest Seat, Lord General of the Held Armies of Kura.
The boy was a little overwhelmed, but even as he followed protocol to the best of his ability, he could barely take his eyes off Lantano Garawashi. He must be the boy's hero, Fear thought. Of course, Lantano Garawashi was probably every young Sakurai's hero. Garawashi eyed the middle-aged man more than the boy. Was he the real power? The boy a figurehead? As the boy and his minister got closer and took their seats, Fear's heart dropped. The middle-aged man was a court mage of some kind, his talent formidable. Garawashi caught Fear's eye and shook his head slightly. It was the signal to abandon the fraud. It was over. Only death would follow.
I guess we might as well do what we're here for, shall we? It has been brought to our attention that claims have been brought forward by you or by your followers, Doan Lantano Garawashi. We understand you have claimed to wield the Blade of Heaven, Kur Kalestos.
I have made such claims, Doan Hideo.
By ancient law and prophecy, the holder of Kur Kalestos is to be Kura's king, a man to usher in the return of the High King, whose reign will announce the birth of the Champion of the Light. Do you claim the high seat of Kura, Lantano Garawashi?
I do.
What was he doing? Fear shot a look over at Garawashi's sword. The Dragon of the Pommel grinned emptily like a boy who'd lost both front teeth.
Hold on. It was my understanding that Kura's regent is Doan Hideo Watanabe. How do we even know that, pardon me, this boy has the authority to test Lantano Garawashi?
You dare?
The middle-aged Sakurai put a hand to his sword.
Yes, I dare. And if you draw that sword, I'll dare feed it to you.
Ha! You're an old cripple.
Which will make your death all the more embarrassing.
Stop! Hideo Watanabe is my father. Was. He gathered this army. But before he marched, I learned that he didn't intend to test you, Doan Lantano. He intended to kill you, whether or not you held the real Kur Kalestos. I confronted him for dishonoring the regency. When we dueled, I slew him.
Fear couldn't believe it. The boy killed his father for the idea of Lantano Garawashi.
I am the regent now. And by my father's blood that stains my hands, I have the right to test the man who would be our king. Please, Doan Lantano, show us Kur Kalestos.
Everyone stopped and looked to the back of the tent where a knife was cutting a vertical slash all the way to the ground. Instantly, every Magian mages embraced their talent and a dozen hands went to the hilts of swords. An assassin would have a hard time with this crowd. A hand poked in and waved.
Pardon me? If I step inside, am I going to be skewered?
Not waiting for an answer, he stepped inside. He had pure white hair with black tips, deeply tanned olive skin, and a muscular bare chest beneath a rich cloak. He wore loose white pants, and a thick gold crown sat snug against his brow.
Solon!
Only to you, my dear friend.
As for the rest of you, pardon my unconventional entrance, but you have 20,000 surly Sakurai blocking the front of the tent. I am Solonarawan Tofusin, King of Seth. I would say Emperor, but as of 10 years ago, we have no more colonies, so Emperor is a tad pretentious. Your Majesty, King Gaia, I bring 1,000 men to your efforts. I did also bring 5 ships, but someone flooded the river this morning, and now I have only 2, and I'm lucky not to have lost any men. Sisters, should we emerge from this conflict alive, I will be asking the Chantry for reimbursement. Fear, it seems you travel in exalted company these days. Ah, this must be Sister Ariel Wyant, a legend in your own time. And V. Sovari, both buxom and brilliant. I've heard so much about you.
It's shit.
Apparently, all I've heard is true. I have to tell you, on my way here, I saw a very dour Lai Kanot gentleman speaking some rather choice words at being denied entry by the selfsame Sakurai, who barred yours truly from said engagement. But here I stand, at considerable cost to my kingdom, and most especially my marriage. It took me weeks of moping about Whitecliff to secure my wife's permission to come. Oh, you married men can pretend to be the masters of your castles and keeps and so forth. But the mistress of the bedchamber is the mistress of the master, eh? Regardless, here I stand, and I must say, the crowning jewel of my visit is this. Lantano Garawashi, it is a great honor to meet you.
Solon strode over to the Sakurai and extended his hand.
I don't clasp hands with fish.
It seems to me that a man born to an iron blade should not scorn the friendship of kings.
Dead silence settled on the room. No one spoke like that to Lantano Garawashi.
You have no peer when it comes to the spilling of blood, Lantano Garawashi. If you died today, your only legacy would be blood. Wouldn't you rather that your legacy was that of a man who spilled blood to quench the fires of war? Can butcher's hands become carpenter's hands? As a brother king, I ask you once more and once only, will you take the hand of friendship?
Solon stood with hand extended. It was an odd thing to ask a doomed man. Tyr expected Garawashi to spit in Solon's face, but Garawashi stood.
Let there be peace between us.
He took Solon's hand, standing right next to him, his own bulk blocking most of the table from seeing what transpired. Fear saw sudden confusion in Lantano Garawashi's eyes. He withdrew his hand from Solon's clasp with one finger still pressed against his palm, concealing something. Then he rested that hand on Ker Kalestus's pommel. With a tiny sound, something clicked home, and Fear understood.
Gods! The Greatest Red gives dragons heart and head.
Fear had thought it meant the Greatest Red Ruby, and it did. But it also meant the Greatest Red Mage, Solon. Garawashi whipped the sword out of its scabbard and slammed it on the table. A perfect ruby, redder than ruby red, burned in the pommel, and it swam with deep magic, though Fear hadn't imbued it with any runes. The Mysteril blade had patterns like a folded steel blade, but its patterns glittered like diamonds, sparkling and then transparent, letting a man see all the way through the blade into the heart of its magic. As they watched, every diamond-like ripple faded to a purer translucence like a slow shockwave as the twin dragons breathed fire. The fire blossomed in a thick bar from hilt all the way to the point of the sword. The heat of it warmed Fear's face. Fear had created something beyond himself. He was a great smith, but he wasn't this good. Awed, Fear turned to Solon. The new king Tofusin grinned at him.
Call me fraud, or call me king!
Hideo Mitsurugi's jaw was slack.
Lantano Garawashi! I declare you...
My lord!
My ancestors have looked forward to this day for centuries. We've wanted it and feared it. Perhaps the regents most of all. Frauds have been attempted. So the regent's sword carries a test. I beg your pardon, Don Lantano, but it is my duty.
Adeo drew his ruby-encrusted blade and gave the pommel a sharp twist. It clicked, and he pulled half of the hilt off. Inside was a thin scroll woven with preservation magics.
Archidum Chigera, Acenioa Celanchan Breheda, Lantano Garawashi, banish the fires from the blade.
Garawashi took the blade, and the fires died.
How did he know how to do that?
I need a candle.
Someone slid one down the table to him. He picked it up and brought it toward the blade. Terror seized Fear's breath. Mitsurugi brought the candle to the very spot Fear had hidden his vanity, his own smith mark. The crossed warhammers practically leapt out of the metal. Fear's heart stopped.
Down to Oren Raisin's crossed warhammers. It's real. This blade is Gor Callisto's. Lantano Garawashi, you are the lost king of Kura. The Sakurai stand at your word.
Real, not a forgery. The very things that made it different from Kurok were what convinced the region that Fear's blade was real. Fear's limbs felt weak. He had a single moment to think.
Oh, how embarrassing. I can't possibly pass.
Then he passed out. After Fear collapsed, and what was that about, Ariel wondered, the odious overlord of the Lai Kanat, Julius Rotans, finally won his way through the waiting Sakurai and made it into the tent. Hideo Mitsurugi wanted to go immediately and announce that Kura had found its king, but Logan had asked him to wait. Ariel still didn't know why. Julius Rotans was in his late 40s, his figure still trim and military and his features pure Alataran. He wore a white tabard emblazoned with a sun and a white cloak with 12 gold chevrons. Sister Ariel couldn't make out any other details. The man emanated such a deep aura of ill health, she almost gagged. He didn't remove his gauntlets as he sat, and, mercifully, there were no open sores on his face. But Julius Rotans was a leper. Worse, his strain of leprosy was the simplest kind to heal. Even Sister Ariel could do it, but it would take magic.
So, everyone's here already, I see. No need to include the Lycanoct in the planning, huh? Just throw us at the thickest part of the enemy, and whether we live or die, you win.
Overlord, I have wronged you. Your representatives told me it was unfair and unwise. Actually, I think the word was stupid. For me to assume direct control over your men. Forgive me. I was worried they would betray me. That was unworthy of me, and it was indeed stupid.
The Overlord's eyes narrowed, wary. Everyone else watched carefully.
Today, due to the terrain, your men didn't fight. But tomorrow we will rely on you. Your losses may be significant. You have our only heavy cavalry, and you will indeed hold the center.